From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, David Wilcock joins us, Life Throughout the Universe. Good to be back after a one-week annual vacation. As we move into 2009 now, and quite a year we have in store, don't we? We'll talk more about that in the days to come on some upcoming Coast to Coast shows. But a story that we have been talking about for several years now seems to be getting quite ominous these days. Hundreds of earthquakes have hit Yellowstone National Park, raising fears of a more powerful volcanic eruption. The earthquake swarm, the biggest in more than 20 years, is being closely monitored by scientists and emergency authorities. Now, the last full-scale explosion of the Yellowstone supervolcano, the Lava Creek eruption, which happened approximately 640,000 years ago, ejected about 240 cubic miles, that's miles, of rock and dust into the sky. It is overdue to erupt. In a moment, we'll be talking with Earth Changes expert Mitch Batros about this story. He's been talking about this for years as well. A series of earthquakes shook remote eastern Indonesia on Sunday, toppling or badly damaging more than 100 buildings and leaving at least four people dead and dozens injured. That count will go up. One of the earthquakes, a 7.3 magnitude, was felt as far away as Australia and sent small tsunamis into Japan's southeastern coast. Tiny diamonds found in the soil are strong evidence that a comet exploded on or above North America nearly 13,000 years ago, leading to the extinction of dozens of mammal species, according to a study. The scientific report also suggests that the cataclysm also reduced the population of the earliest people to inhabit that region and triggered a 1,300-year-long cold spell that stretched around the world. Israeli troops gained control of parts of northern Gaza Sunday, less than 24 hours after launching a ground incursion into the Palestinian territory. They have now split that in two. The ground push has resulted in mounting casualties on both sides. The fighting there just never seems to end. A female homicide bomber blew herself up on Sunday among a crowd of pilgrims worshiping at a Shiite shrine in northern Baghdad. That war continues, killing at least 38 people, wounding about 72 others. Very sad story over the weekend. The 16-year-old son of actors John Travolta and Kelly Preston died Friday morning after suffering a seizure while vacationing with his family in the Bahamas. The boy hit his head after the seizure, but the exact cause of death not known yet. An autopsy will be conducted Monday. His body will then be transferred to Ocala, Florida, for burial. Mars rovers are celebrating a remarkable 5 years on the red planet. The first robot named Spirit landed on January 3, 2004, followed by its twin Opportunity 21 days later. It was hoped the robots would work for at least 3 months, but their longevity in the freezing Martian conditions surprised everyone. The rover's data has revealed much about the history of water at Mars's equator billions of years ago. And President-elect Barack Obama apparently will probably tear down long-standing barriers between the U.S.'s civilian and military space programs to speed up a mission to the moon amid the prospect of a new space race, not with Russia, but with China. Obama's transition team considering a collaboration between the Defense Department and the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, because military rockets may be cheaper and ready sooner than the space agency's planned launch vehicle, which isn't slated to fly until around 2015. Richard C. Hoagland, head of the ImpriseMission.com, has been following the work of Barack Obama and what will happen. As a matter of fact, his new work is going to be talked about in just a second. Richard, you expected this decision, didn't you?
You know, I'm one of the few guys, I guess, that really did. I have been forecasting that President Obama, when he takes office, is going to be much more serious about NASA, about space in general, than anyone except us has apparently projected, and the projections turn out to be true.
What is your take on his decision to possibly do this, to work with the civilian, I'll put that in quotes, NASA, and the military program?
Well, as you know, in Dark Mission, the book that Mike Barra and I wrote, you know, last year, the New York Times bestseller, Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, we lay out incredible, extensive, and documentable links between the civilian space program and the military space program. So to me and to Mike and our colleagues, this comes as no surprise. Frankly, I think the Bloomberg story is slightly misleading, because if they proceed with what they're planning in terms of discussion to do, which is to use the military rockets to basically, you know, get an edge up on going back to the moon, the Delta IV and the Alice V and all that, this will simply be a reprise of history that happened, you know, 40, 50 years ago when NASA was first formed. Because when NASA was formed by President Eisenhower in the summer of 1958, it had no civilian rockets. So it used military rockets from the Air Force, the Deltas, the Atlas, the Titan. So that would not be a surprise. What's a surprise is hidden in the fine print and between the lines, which, of course, this audience is well-tuned to paying attention to, is the idea of a, quote, closer cooperation with the military space program, because I think in that phrase there is an enormous amount of unspoken information to be revealed someday and released over the next few months about the extent to NASA's much deeper military connections.
No doubt about it. Thanks, Richard. Richard's work, theenterprisemission.com, has just put together a DVD on this subject called The Hyperdimensional Election of Barack Obama in 2012. He truly was one of the few to see this in the future. Interested in that, it's toll-free 877-345-6222 or enterprisemission.com. New Jersey authorities say a woman drowned trying to retrieve her grandson's dog from a frozen pond. Authorities say 61-year-old Janet Howard was walking a German Shepherd named Apollo when it wandered onto the ice on a pond. Police speculate that Howard went after the dog, but the ice broke, plunging her and the animal into the water about 20 feet from shore. In Danbury, Connecticut, on the day that Donald Peters died, he unknowingly provided financial security for his wife of 59 years and his entire family. Peters bought two Connecticut lottery tickets at a local 7-Eleven store on November 1st as part of a 20-year tradition that he shared with his wife, Charlotte. Later that day, the 79-year-old retired hat factory worker suffered a fatal heart attack while working in his yard in Danbury. On Friday, his widow cashed in one of the tickets, which turned out to be a $10 million winner, which, in her grief over her husband's death, she had put aside and almost discarded it before recently checking the numbers. Another miracle. What's going on at Yellowstone? How serious? How dangerous could this be? Mitch Batros joins us in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Now, this is a huge story, Yellowstone National Park. Mitch Batros has dedicated his professional life to helping all of us prepare for the coming earth changes. Mitch was among the first to recognize the preeminent role of solar flares and lunar eclipses in producing extreme weather disruptions. He strongly opposes the global elitist view that only human activity is behind current global warming. He's with us this hour. This is a major story on Coast to Coast. Mitch, welcome back, my friend.
Well, thank you, George. Glad to be with you, and I hope you enjoyed your vacation over the holidays.
Yeah, I did. They go by quickly, but it's good to get back behind the microphone, Mitch.
Well, I know what you mean.
We've been talking for years, you have too, about the possibility of this caldera at Yellowstone. Would you first of all explain for all of us, Mitch, what a caldera is?
I sure will. I guess the best way to describe it, especially on the radio, is with a vision. Imagine a volcano that is upside down. That really does help describe how a caldera actually works. The top of the volcano, it doesn't have a typical cone that we would imagine, such as Volcano Popo or Mount St. Helens or any number of volcanoes that has this high rise that comes to a peak. A caldera is underground. So really, from a visual point of view, if we were to stand there, such as Yellowstone, and we looked across, we wouldn't notice anything other than the geophysical events that are occurring, the thermal events. So the vast portion of a caldera is below the surface, and it goes down, tunnels down to magma chambers.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, this is called a super volcano, which to me, a novice, means it's pretty big.
That's right. To give you an example, the last supervolcano that exploded was Toba. It erupted with an explosion about 74,000 years ago. The force of the explosion was estimated to be 10,000 times more powerful than Mount St. Helens. And those of us that were around during 1980, May of 1980, and, of course, anybody who reviews the history, that was a tremendous explosion. A supervolcano would be 10,000 times stronger. It's almost too hard to wrap our minds around. The distance, the massive size of a caldera, especially Yellowstone, is 53 miles long and 28 miles wide. So if you, as you can imagine, if Yellowstone was to have a full eruption, it would be hazardous to at least half of the United States, a good portion of Canada. It would affect the world's temperature and atmospheric conditions for 3 years or more. It is a horrendous event. And as you mentioned earlier, you're right, all the geologists and seismologists, and I'm talking about the top of the top, believe that we are due, Yellowstone is due for a cyclical event.
All right, we're getting now reports of hundreds of earthquakes in that region. You've been monitoring them, Mitch. They say this is the biggest earthquake swarm in more than 20 years. They're monitoring what's going on. Are they truly concerned? Are they afraid of this, or are they not?
Well, let's address that. They're just like with any event, especially hurricanes and volcanoes, and I'll tell you why. Because it takes a while for them to occur. It doesn't happen with earthquakes because earthquakes happen spontaneous, instant. There are some precursors. Some might be able to tell when something's coming. But an earthquake is rapid, so there's no time to kind of get the blood going and getting the stories rolling. With a hurricane, we see it coming. There's time to put some analysis out on the Internet and basically scare a lot of people. So there are some people out there that, as with every event, that are maybe a little over-sensationalizing what's happening in Yellowstone. So let me put this to rest.
Okay.
Professor Robert Smith, he is one of the leading authorities of Yellowstone. He's a research professor of geology and geophysics at the University of Utah. I've had him on my show. I've talked to him directly. He, in my opinion, is a straight shooter. He's a scientist, and he's not one that would be told, you better not say this. In other words, I can't see anybody controlling this guy. He's really, filled with integrity. There's also Dr. David Applegate. He is the senior science advisor for the USGS. You can't get much higher than these guys. Both of them are monitoring the situation, and Robert Smith has gone far enough to say that this could potentially be a killer. Let me put that to the side. It's very important to understand that this could be precursors to something more. But speaking of today and current events, as we are talking this particular night, Yellowstone is still at code green. I disagree with that. I believe it should be code yellow. But code green means that there's no danger of anything happening. I would argue that it is not, normal circumstances because of the number. Over 500 earthquakes, and here's some more statistics that just recently came out directly. I got them directly from David Applegate. This is behind the scenes. This hadn't been made public yet, but as soon as I can, I'll make it public.
All right.
16 of the earthquakes that have occurred over the last few days at Yellowstone have been three magnitude to 3.9. Approximately 70 of them have been a magnitude of magnitude 2 to a 3.0 magnitude. That is significant. If it was to inch 1 degree more, if it was a 4.0 or larger, that no doubt would kick it into code orange. Code yellow probably, which is a heightened state of awareness. That's when they do put a warning out, or a watch, I should say. A warning is at another level. And they would take further precautions, such as possible evacuation of say, a 10 or 20-mile radius.
Should they do that now, Mitch? Evacuate now? They should not.
Okay. I don't see anything that suggests that. Okay, here's what needs to occur prior to an eruption. It's widely known. Most geologists and seismologists agree with this. It takes, unlike an earthquake, there's a series of events that occur that are precursors to volcano activity. The first thing that one watches for is the swarm. Okay, that's taken place. Once the swarm has taken place, then you measure the magnitude. If it's in the 1.0 to 3.5 range, it's something to watch very closely, but does not reach the potential of an imminent eruption.
Okay.
The next phase is to see if they grow larger. If they grow to 4.0 or larger, then everybody comes in and starts the process of evacuation and heightened alert.
And what do you need for that? Could just one earthquake of a 4.0 cause that to happen?
I think that would shake everybody up and probably bring more people into the area. That would be my guess. If another one was to follow it, I think that they probably would go ahead and make the announcement of a watch or a warning. Also, the depth is important. And that's why I disagree with their code green right now. I definitely think it should be code yellow.
All right.
Very quickly, if we have just a moment.
Absolutely. Go
ahead. Okay, code green means that a volcano is in its typical background, no eruptive state, no change, volcano activity has ceased, and there's no danger of eruption whatsoever. Yellow takes it one step further, where volcano is exhibiting signs of elevated unrest. I think there's no doubt that we're seeing that now. And one thing that sticks out that makes me want to, I would advise switching it to an advisory, is that the unrest above is above known background activity. So background activity would be the geysers, Old Faithful. This is beyond that. It's nowhere near a code orange or red where evacuation is necessary or the emergency management team comes in, but I can guarantee you that a number of seismologists and geologists in the area are watching this very closely. When David Applegate's involved, I can promise you the top of the USGS is monitoring it.
They're watching this. Yeah, go ahead.
Here's one more thing, George, is that I've received so many emails with this concern of how come we don't get more information. Well, it's going to be a surprise to many, but just like us, government workers take vacations too. Who's usually left are junior members who, with a skeleton crew, who are watching it over the holidays. So I can tell you that starting next week, starting Monday, really tomorrow, we'll probably start getting a lot more information.
It's almost like Mother Nature knows when to start earthquake swarms, Mitch.
It's scary, yeah.
There's a feature story at coasttocoastam.com about this earthquake swarm, and also there's a link to Mitch's website. We're going to talk with Mitch in just a moment, too, when we come back about Mayan prophecy. We're also going to take your phone calls. Mitch, I'm told that in some areas around Yellowstone, it's so hot, people can't even walk on the ground. Is that true?
That is true. That's around Norris Junction. And this occurred back in 2003. The word had got out actually by some listeners to the show, and they called in and said, hey, what's up with this? And then the very next day it made national news. What happened was is the surface ground around the Norris Lake had started to reach temperatures of 200 degrees. People's tennis shoes were melting. Now, they had to close the area all around that. And it is a very active thermal, geothermal area. So this does occur. They did monitor it to see if there was any escalation at the time. There was not. The USGS did make a mistake, and believe me, I took it all the way to the top to research this. they had posted that a 5.3 earthquake had occurred. Well, after speaking with some geological authorities, it would take a nuclear explosion to reach a 5.3 magnitude. What had happened was, it was human error, that they reversed the numbers and it was a 3.5. Not a 5.3.
Ah, stay with us. Mitch Batros, our guest. We're going to open up the phone lines. This is a very important subject matter. Mitch is not too concerned today, but when we come back, let's find out what it's going to take for him and some other earth change experts to really get concerned about Yellowstone. Also, Mayan prophecy concerning Yellowstone. That's all next with your calls. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. And if you'd like more information on Mitch Batros and his work, you can go to his website, earthchangesmedia.com. We made it simple for you. There's a link at coasttocoastam.com. And by the way, if you're not a subscriber yet to the free Coast Zone newsletter, well, go ahead to the coasttocoastam.com website. There's a link right there on the homepage. You get it every morning. It's an e-mail newsletter. It goes right to your computer. Coast Zone, that's what it's called, and it's free. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Mitch Batros this hour. Mitch, what would it take for you to really start getting concerned about Yellowstone?
If the swarm picks up again and we start to see some earthquakes 4.0 or larger. Also, there will be some steam vents that open up. Being that it's at the bottom of a lake, Lake Yellowstone, which there already is a bulge. Now, this is what we don't know. It hasn't been confirmed. This is what I'll probably find out tomorrow, and as soon as I do, everybody else will.
All right.
That there was a bulge that existed that was originally found back in 1999 in the same area, the same lake. So it very well could be that same bulge that's simply growing. Now, what causes the bulge is what we can all guess. Of course, that's magma coming forward. Now, again, it's important to confirm that it's the same bulge or a new one. It could very well be, but it is the same location. I would expect to see a larger earthquake, continued swarm, earthquakes of 4.0 or larger, steam coming out, and since it's under the lake, bubbles. We would see bubbles and then steam. And unfortunately, of course, it will kill many of the fish, so I would expect to see fish and amphibians, frogs and stuff floating, unfortunately, on the river. That is what, and the depth of the seismic activity, which is already alarming. It's as shallow as a half a mile. It's from 1 to 10 kilometers. So to transfer the miles, it's a half a mile to 5 miles deep. That's very, very shallow. Also suggesting that that it's a magma tunnel. That's channeled that's either pre-existing or existing, which would account if indeed it is the same bulge that had occurred in 1999.
You mentioned in your work solar rain and global warming. You kind of saw this coming, didn't you?
I did. Not personally. I'm not a psychic. I'm not. Some have challenged me to admit that I'm a visionary, but my definition of visionary is really more of my passion for the work that I have, and that just reading the dots, if you will, connecting the dots. I guess you could say I did have a vision when I started in January of 1995. An earthquake hit close to my home in Seattle. It was a moderate quake, a 5.3, but it was my first. So it was huge.
We're going to get into Mayan prophecy regarding Yellowstone in a moment. We'll take some calls here. We'll go, first of all, to our wild card line and catch a can, Alaska. Jay, welcome to the program, Jay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. And
hi.
My question is if anybody had noticed, well, I used to live in the West Yellowstone area up by Hebgen Lake, and I was fascinated with Quake Lake and how that was formed back in, I think it was 1959, and the tragic loss of life that was connected with that.
Yeah, that was a 7.1 in 1959, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And I remember reading a book, I believe it was from a library that was by a federal agency. It was either the Geological Service or the Forest Service that went around and measured the thermal features after that quake, and they found a wide variance. some disappeared, some became larger, and some it didn't affect at all. But there was a wide variance of change from before that earthquake. And I was wondering if there was any anecdotal or scientific evidence towards that. Has any of the thermal features changed to this point? And also, there's a vast amount of wildlife in that area, and I was wondering if there's any
good point.
Anecdotal evidence of animal behavior that had taken place.
Okay, thank you, Jay.
I've received no reports on animal behavior in this round. In 2003, we certainly did. Buffalo or bison had been dying, and it was not known. Some had believed it was, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was a that was forming, and that they were the bison were eating that, and that was what was killing them. However, others believe that that it was more of CO2 that was coming from earthquake activity, and there was a heavy odor of sulfur. So I don't know. As far as is there any shifting going on? Well, there always is. One of the things that they do monitor are the geysers. That's why Old Faithful has its name. Well, there are, from time to time, Old Faithful is not so faithful. And that's certainly a sign that that something's not right.
All right, next up, Rob in Baltimore. It's your turn, Rob, east of the Rockies.
Good morning, guys.
Hi.
Good to have you back, George. How you doing, Mitch? Good to talk to you.
Yeah.
I was just curious as to what we can expect on the East Coast in the hours after Yellowstone goes.
Well,
now that's a good question, Mitch, because, you know, what do you tell folks in the Midwest, folks on the far west, on the East Coast, when Yellowstone goes? I mean, is it big enough where it could affect the entire planet, just the United States? What?
Yes, in different ways. It will affect the entire planet in the way of climate, as what happened with Mount Pinatubo. And to a slightly lesser degree, Mount St. Helens. It wasn't as long as in duration, and the ash fell in more of an immediate area, maybe hundreds of miles, but it affected the climate. It was a cooling. It's going to cool our planet and possibly create more rain and electrical storms. If something like Yellowstone was to go off, it would affect the world's climate and atmospheric conditions 3 years or more, some believe as much as 10 years. Devastating effect. As far as the immediate areas of Canada and the United States, it depends on the direction of the blow, but it would reach hundreds and hundreds of miles. I don't know for sure. I don't know if anybody knows for sure what would occur on the East Coast, which is one of the further areas. Of course, it'd be closer to the West Coast. So I don't know of anybody who knows exactly what would happen. Of course, the more immediate ones would be the hot ash and the pumice. That would be probably a 600-mile radius.
Oh, God. We'd suffocate, Mitch, wouldn't we?
Yes. But just like with Mount St. Helens, all the animals in the area, including humans, certainly died, some of them immediately, instantly, depending on how close they were. I don't want to get too. Let me just say this as we can really look at how devastating it can be. I'm not seeing any signs as of this moment today, and I do believe with conviction that we will have ample time, just like with Mount St. Helens, to use an example. We had weeks and weeks of preparation before the explosion. I think that's exactly what will happen with Yellowstone. We will have the precursors, an increase of seismic activity, steam coming up. We'll see the bubbling of the lake. The fish and amphibians will die, and we'll see the depth of the seismic activity come even closer to the surface. And the people in the USGS and in the seismology field. And the emergency management field will start to evacuate in a very timely manner. There'll be plenty of time, not just hours, but days and weeks of getting people away. But just just how far away can you go? How do you evacuate a city of 1 million to 5 million people?
Yeah, and is there a chronological order to the magnitude of the swarms, Mitch, in that would we go from a 3 to a 4 to a 5, maybe a 6, and then realize Yellowstone's in trouble? Or is it possible we could have these series of 3s, and then one day the whole thing just goes?
Not likely. Every volcano that's erupted, the most recent ones, of course, Mount St. Helens, Pinatubo, or Montserrat, which is bubbling today, that there is that sequence of events that occur, and that, yes, it's almost always, I'm not familiar with the situation where it's not, a gradual increase in numbers, is what we call a swarm, and a heightened magnitude from the ones and twos to the threes and fours. And when it gets into the fours, it's like a 4.0 is the magic marker, then a whole new team shifts in, and then further precautions are taken.
Roxanne, Mount Shasta, California, west of the Rockies, you're on with Mitch Batros. Hey, Roxanne.
Hi, Mitch. Hi, George. Happy New Year.
Whoa. I don't think we're going to be able to take your call there, Roxanne. All right, go ahead. We'll take it again.
Well, Happy New Year to both you and George and Mitch.
All right. That's not going to work. Let me try another call here. Let's go to our first-time caller line. There you go. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. This is Heather from Nassau Bay, Texas.
Okay, Heather, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George and Mitch. Couple things. Yellowstone is sitting on top of a mantle plume, so it's considered a hot spot, right?
Right.
And how does that compare to the one in Hawaii and, I believe, Japan that we have going on this, as far as how active it is?
Mammoth Lake is a caldera, just some miles away. Did you say you're at Shasta? Just go down a couple hundred miles, and you have a caldera right in your backyard.
I'm in Texas, actually.
That's right. You're in Texas. The phone that the bad connection was in. It was in. That's right. These are all hot spots, and some of them are used as they're actually utilized for geothermal energy. New Zealand and Iceland are probably two of the countries that are further along with the use of geothermal energy than anybody else. However, the United States is also using it. There's an area just north of San Francisco called Geyser Lake, which is a very thermal area, and they're using that energy to power homes.
Mitch, what do the Mayans know about all this?
Oh, yeah, let's get to that. Okay, let me take a breath on that one. This is where, George, I have to very carefully walk that path between my science community, which I've been endorsed by NASA and NOAA, the European Space Agency, and the U.S. Naval Observatory and the Royal Observatory, to name a few, and my enthusiastic commitment to ancient texts. The Mayans in particular, the elders, some of which I know personally, have come forward recently in the last 2 and 3 years, and they have named 5 or 6 items or events to watch. One of them is Yellowstone. Another one is a single-strike nuclear exchange between Pakistan and India. Now, both of these were mentioned before. Well, Yellowstone was on the map to a degree, but Pakistan and India certainly was not. And look what's happened in the last several months. This was told to me 18 months ago. And one of the items is Yellowstone. And they did not detail what would happen, but it is in Mayan prediction that Yellowstone, in the words that they use, is likely to occur in our lifetime. But again, for the audience, because I'm getting emails of some people that are very scared, George. I mean, this is really scaring some people.
It is scary stuff, especially if it happens. But we're dealing with probability here, though, Mitch, aren't we?
That's right. I think there's no doubt it's going to happen. The question is always when. And I really want people to understand that volcanoes are not like earthquakes. It's not going to blindside. It's not going to suddenly come out of nowhere. We will have a steady flow of information, and there will be a gradual escalation of code evacuating. However, you're right, Georgia. Even with all that, how do you evacuate a city of 1 million to 5 million people? That is something that we've never done. Can we do it? I take it back. We had a little practice.
We tried New Orleans, but it didn't work well.
That was the worst of it. We had a little better outcome with...
it was Gustav, or was it Ike?
Ike. Yeah, they did pretty good with Gustav. That was on the hills of Katrina, but they did good. They did good with Ike. So it did happen. Where 12 lanes of highway were pointed in one direction, is an awesome sight, and they did fairly well. So I guess it could happen, and that is what it would look like. Except this is not a small area like the Gulf Coast of Mexico, where Houston and that whole area was, Louisiana. This is an area. The Yellowstone would reach an area five times that size. I don't know what to say. I think that people will start analyzing this now. I think, as a matter of fact, as emergency management, I do some work with emergency management myself, and that is on the agenda. Just as what happened with Katrina, that was something we were already practicing in 1991. It was no surprise. We knew that this was one of the top 10 natural events that could occur.
Let's go east of the Rockies, Washington, D.C. we go. Vince, go ahead. You're on Coast to Coast.
Yes, good evening. Salutations, aloha, buenos dias.
You got it.
My question is, weren't the Mayas the same people that worshipped Quetzalcoatl? And didn't they mistake the Spanish conquistadors as the return of their god according to their prophecy?
I would challenge the idea of the conquistadors. They did honor a couple of cattle, true. And then, of course, we have movies such as Mel Gibson's
Apocalypto.
Exactly. I take issue with that. I think, like with any civilization, you're going to have some polarity. In my opinion, I do not believe that what Mel Gibson was presenting was a majority of the Mayan culture. I think that there probably were a portion of warlike as part of their tribes, but I don't think that that it really does reflect that culture. I think they were far advanced in many ways, obviously in astrological ways.
Let's take our final caller here, Mitch. Maggie, west of the Rockies, you're on with us. Go ahead, Maggie.
Hi, George. Hi. Glad to have you back. Happy New Year to you.
My pleasure. You too.
And, I'm from Nampa, Idaho, and we're about 300 miles from Yellowstone. And right now everybody's kind of watching it, wondering what is it going to happen if the thing does go up, the circumference of the explosion approximately. That's my question.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it would reach your state. let me address it this way. There's not a week that goes by where someone doesn't, actually more like a dozen emails that I receive asking me, Mitch, where should I move? Where should I move? Whether it be a volcano, an earthquake, a tsunami, a tornado, it doesn't matter. And they don't like my answer, but I believe it to be the truth. It's not where you live that's going to matter. It's who you live with. Now, granted, I mean, if you live in Wyoming, it might be a good idea having enough time. And again, I stress that we will have weeks, if not a couple of months' notice.
Mitch, you give us the update as soon as you get it, okay?
I will.
Thanks a lot. Mitch Batros' website linked up at coastam.com. When we come right back, David Wilcock joins us. Life throughout the universe.